If you will, turn with me this morning to Romans, the first chapter. That's going to be the text that we will examine in our lesson this morning. Romans chapter 1, Paul is actually describing a progression of sin among the Gentiles. Of course, sin always brings us under the wrath of God. That is always the case. Another truth that is found about sin is that it tends to increase with regard to more and more ungodliness, more and more defilement, unless it is something that is dealt with by truly repenting of that sin. So it's a matter of digression and defilement and dissolution rather than growth that is a direct result of the first sins that we commit as long as those sins go unchecked. In 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 16, the Apostle Paul said to Timothy to shun profane and idle babblings, for they will increase to more ungodliness. That is, if you entertain it in the beginning, it gets worse and worse. Now, at the beginning of this text, you'll notice in verses 16 through 17, God gives us a means of knowing and obeying Him by revealing Himself through His word of truth. He says it is the gospel that is the power of God to salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first and to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. So as you recognize that we live by faith, the question is, how do the unjust or the sinners live? And really, sin comes as a result of individuals choosing not to acknowledge God and not to acknowledge His will. And certainly, the Gentiles in Romans chapter 1 serve as a sobering reminder to all of us of just how progressively destructive that sin truly is, how it goes when an individual forgets God and forgets His will. So what we're going to do this morning is quickly examine the text of Romans chapter 1. And I want you, just as we're going through this, while because it is somewhat chronological in its approach, while we go through from verse to verse how the digression increases and more is said about unrighteousness and defilement as we go through the passage here in Romans chapter 1, with regard again to the Gentiles as contrasted to the Jews. The Jews have their condemnation in chapter 2 of the text. But here in chapter 1, he is specifically referring to the Gentile nations and their idolatry. Now, first of all, note, as stated in Romans 1 and verses 18 through 20, that the first step is people simply choose to disregard God and to live in unrighteousness. In other words, it just is a willful choice not to think about or not to obey God. We are told the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness. Because what may be made known of God is manifest in them. God has shown it to them. And since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, so that, even as His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. And so we just want to note that as we begin to sin, it is indeed a willful choice that we make. There is no excuse in regard to this, even as we acknowledge the creation of God, that first thing, we know there is a supreme being, and we cannot disregard Him and disregard His concerns for us. It is something that we need, we are obligated to examine, to concern ourselves with. You'll remember back in Hosea chapter 4 in verse 6, when the prophet Hosea indicated the rebelliousness of the people, he said, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." Wrote this, these are the words of Jehovah. He said, "Because you have rejected knowledge, I will also reject you from being priest for me. Because you have forgotten the law of your God, I will forget your children." So they had forgotten it, but it was a willful forgetting, a willful rejection, a willful lack of knowledge. In other words, there is a choice here that was made. So this is the first step. We simply disregard God. God is no longer relevant in our society. And I want you to look when we see this, because it is an interesting parallel. As we go through and look at what was happening in Rome with the Gentiles, the degradation in sin that was present, we see the exact same patterns in our culture, in our society today. We do know that for the most part, the world has rejected the instructions of God and disregard God Himself as the Gentiles did on this occasion. So this is the beginning. This is why sin enters into a culture. This is why sin enters into the church. This is why sin can enter into your own life. Now you'll notice in the second point to be made here is that the sinner not only disregards God, but he stops worshiping God. So God's not in the picture, so the adoration, the thanksgiving that comes as a result of an individual who is zealous is no longer present. And this foolish heart only produces futile thoughts. We are told in Romans 1:21, although they knew God, they did not glorify Him as God, nor were they thankful, but they became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Now, you understand the phrase, their foolish hearts were darkened. The word darkened there is used metaphorically here of a lack of light for the understanding or the mind. And we know that man's thinking does not equate to divine thinking. We cannot know the mind of God, but there are many individuals who, when they disregard God, they say, well, I've got the way that I need to go, or I have an idea of what will get the most out of life, or how best I can progress. And because they have disregarded God, we're told the Jews, in an example in Romans 10, seeking to establish their own righteousness, they have not submitted to the righteousness of God. The futility of this idea that I can direct myself in ways that are acceptable without considering the one to whom I owe my very existence and my allegiance or loyalty is absolutely absurd. And so these individuals became futile in their thinking as a result of this. Now the third point to note in this regard is that once God's will is rejected and He turns to human wisdom, that's what it is. It is human wisdom, as we alluded to. It's not the thinkings of God. It is our own righteousness or our own understanding. But it also impacts our understanding of the nature of God. That's where idolatry comes in. Men forget the true God of heaven, and then they begin to fashion their own gods. And that is done today. But I would remind you of what was stated in Acts chapter 17 with regard to the Apostle Paul, as he told the Athenians, you are worshiping an unknown God. There was no reason for him to be unknown to them, but they had willfully rejected him and instead began to erect, and this had gone on for generations, they began to erect gods in accord with their own thinking, with regard to their own concept of what a God should be. These were made by their own devising rather than devising by God. And as a result of that, we are told in Romans 1:22 that professing to be wise, they became fools in changing the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible men, like birds and four-footed beasts and creeping things. And so this is indeed perhaps the most egregious, at least with regard to condemnation given, described again and again in the Old Testament, the most egregious sin of God's people is that they had no longer retained this knowledge of God. They had rejected the true concept of God and changed it instead to the concept of thinking of men. And so when you see in the various prophets, the prophets talk about adultery and unfaithfulness with regard to idolatry, you see how this is the case. In Hosea chapter 4 and verse 12, he said, my people ask counsel from their wooden idols, and their staff informs them, for the spirit of harlotry has caused them to stray, and they have played the harlot against their God. Such unfaithfulness, because here God is, and as Paul said, He's not far from each of us. We are made in accord with His creation, His will, His design, and yet we disregard God and we go to our own thinking and we reject Him even though He is right there. And so this idea of disregarding God and to turning to idolatry is indeed unfaithfulness in His eyes. So we see it going down. We've reached such a a point of degradation in our society, our culture. Now, we may say that our God is secularism. Can we not say that? That our religion is atheism, or the evidence that is supplied with regard to our philosophy is evolution, and we go all through that, but these are mere idols that have been erected because men want to go away from the concept of the divine with regard to the judgment that will come to those who are ungodly, with regard to the responsibilities that we have to serve the Almighty. And so they replace that with something of their own devising. And so, as this happens, instead of following the truth of God, the sinner begins to think for himself more and more, be guided by his own desires. Okay, God's not in the picture, is he? We don't have to concern ourselves with him, so what I'm going to do is whatever it is that I want to do. Now, it may take a lifetime, it may take a generation or two, but the thing that I have seen in my life here on this earth, born in 1962, a child of the 70s, and coming up, is just how far we have gone as a culture, going from what I thought to be, although not righteous by any means, it's still at least a nation that had a concern for the things of God and its plurality, to now where anything goes at all. Notice verse 24 and 25 of Romans 1. God, because they rejected him, gave them up. In other words, he let them go where they wanted to go. He gave them up to uncleanness and the lusts of their hearts, to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie, worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. When people talk about sophistication, when people talk about education, when people talk about how these days it is gauche and it is unacceptable and it's ignorant to be a Christian, it's because they have rejected God and God has allowed it. It's not because they're smarter than we are. It's not because their philosophy is so much more sophisticated than what we have to present. It is simply a rejection of God. And if you reject God, God allows you to reject him. And so as sin progresses, it takes more and more to be satisfied, leading to further sin. And again, our society mirrors this. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verses 3 through 4, as you look at the degradation and progression of sinfulness, states this: we have spent enough of our past lifetime doing the will of Gentiles. And remember, it's the Gentiles to which we refer here in Romans 1. We've done that enough. What is characteristic of the Gentiles is not what God desires. We walked in lewdness and lust and drunkenness and revelries and drinking parties and abominable idolatries. And in regard to these, notice, they think it's strange that you don't run with them in the same form or flood of dissipation, and they speak evil of you. Isn't that exactly what happens to us as Christians today? We are the outcast. We are the weird ones because we don't do what everybody else does. And the reason we do not do what everyone else does, if we're serving faithfully, is because we remember God. And we remember the type of God that is revealed in his will and his word, and we conform our lives to what he expects of us. But the world in general thinks that's just ridiculous. It's extreme. It's not to be contemplated. And as such, they ridicule us and they speak evil of us. I'll say it's a badge of honor to receive ridicule from the words of men and the actions of men and the attitudes of men in general, because of just how far our society has gone. And then as you continue on, you note that the lustful passions of sin lead to full defilement, even to the point of defending something that is unnatural. Because here we get in Romans chapter 1 and verse 26, the actual example of homosexuality that is contained in this. And again, that is an issue, political issue, a cultural issue that we have been touched by as a nation. So we very closely, I think, mirror what was happening in Rome and in Romans chapter 1. The curious thing is that men today, just as they have in the past, defend such as being natural. But you recognize definitionally that can't be so. As we understand that the purpose, even if you don't believe in the creation of God, which we do, God created man and woman to replenish the earth, to fulfill, to fill the earth. But even an evolutionist will say that the impelling of the biological sex drive is to serve the process of procreation. That's the purpose of it. In fact, if you'll hear all of these things, they will talk about mechanisms and they'll talk about evolution and processes that all serve that specific purpose. Men are the way they are and women are the way they are specifically because this brings children. And then they go on and say, but it's natural for there to be a relationship where no children at all are possible. But the two sexes, the two genders exist and are created by God specifically for the case of bringing about the procreation of man. And as such, something that does not accomplish that cannot be defined as something that is natural, whether it be with regard to an evolutionary process or the dictates and will of God. But it's gone beyond that today. We've been asked to believe in multiple genders, gender fluidity, and even the need to, quote, protect our children by allowing them to have, in their minority, gender reassignment surgeries. Can you imagine that? And so we see that this is a strong indication of the rampant depravity and evil that is present in our society. Now read verses 26 through 28 of the text. For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions. Their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise, the men, leaving the natural use of women, burned in their lust for one another. Men with men committing what is shameful, receiving in themselves the penalty of their error which was due. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do what is not fitting. They contrast that with Genesis chapter 1, which tells us God created man in His image. In the image of God, He created him, male and female. He created them, and God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. There we have what is natural, and of course what is God's will, but men have degraded to the point that such a thing is absurd and totally against what we stand for as a nation today, as a people today, which is inclusion even of these abominations against the sight of God. And so, the sinner willfully and completely forgets God, and his life is filled with more and more ungodliness. Romans 1:28, even as they refused to have God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, and covetousness, malicious, they're full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, hateful to God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil things. Boy, doesn't that apply to us today? Inventors of evil things. Disobedient to parents without understanding. Covenant breakers without natural affection. Unmerciful. Moral sins indicate a reprobate mind. When limits are removed, licentiousness becomes the norm. And I think that's why sin is so prolific in our culture, because they're in this lack of respect for authority, a lack of respect for one another, a sense that if I want to do it, I have a right, that liberty trumps any kinds of responsibility that I might have. It is because men have forgotten God and His will, and it has gotten to a degraded place. A digression that is something that is unseemly and certainly something we should be not proud of, but we should be ashamed of as a culture, and something that we as Christians need to always be on guard against, lest it in any way affects us in the same way. And so with that in mind, look at one final point that we want to make as we draw our lesson to a close, and that is that the person who lives in sin, rather than repenting of his sin, he is worthy of death. Romans 1:32. Knowing the ordinance of God, they that practice such things are worthy of death. They not only do the same, but they also consent with them that practice them. Now notice here, the condemnation is not only of practicing the sin, but also in supporting the sin, which indeed condemns most of our society today. Have you ever heard the politician? This is one of the craziest things. It's always stuck in my craw. A politician saying, well, I'm personally opposed to abortion, but I support the right of a woman to have one. That's ridiculous. Well, that's exactly what we're talking about here. And that's a sin maybe that they cannot firsthand even participate in, but it is so hypocritical to say I'm against it, but I support someone else doing it. It's like saying I'm against the murder of an unborn child, but I support the right of the woman to murder her unborn child. This makes no sense whatsoever, and that is not acceptable to God. Sin is antithetical to living as a Christian, as 1 John chapter 3 says. And let's note verses 3 through 10 as we draw our lesson to a close. Notice what John says in 1 John 3 and verse 3. He said, everyone that has this hope, that is the hope of glory, set on him, purifies himself, even as he is pure. Everyone that does sin does lawlessness, and sin is lawlessness. And you know that he was manifested to take away sins. And in him is no sin. Whosoever abides in him sins not. Whoever sins has not seen him, neither knows him. My little children, let no man lead you astray. He that does righteousness is righteous, even as he is righteous. He that does sin is of the devil, for the devil sins and sinned from the beginning. To this end was the Son of God manifested, that he might destroy the works of the devil. Whoever is begotten of God does not sin, because his seed abides in him. He cannot sin, because he is begotten of God. And in this, the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil. Whoever does not do righteousness is not of God. Neither he that loves not his brother. And what is that text? It's not saying that Christians never sin. It's saying that being characteristically a sinner, of proclaiming your position as a child of God, but not showing it in the life that you are living, that you are not indeed what you claim to be, because it is so dangerous to dabble in any aspect of sin. That's against God's will. It is against the Christian nature or calling, because sin brings the wrath of God. Each and every one of us need to ensure that we do not let sin destroy our soul. So I want you to consider those things. It's a wonderful passage, a powerful passage of Scripture, and I hope that what we've talked about is beneficial to you. We offer the invitation at this time, if there is anyone who is here who has any need to respond to the invitation in the 9 o'clock hour, we'll set everything aside and we'll do whatever it is that we need to do to make your life right with God. So if you have a need, would you come now while together we stand and while we sing the song?